Well, thank you, Lyle. I have a few stories. But you're going to have to come and talk to me about those afterwards. It is a pleasure to be here with you all this morning here in London. And as Lyle was saying, I got in late last night. I hope to get in a little earlier so that I could check out some of your tourist attractions here. I hear Westminster Abbey is nice. I've never seen Big Ben. But I'll be back in the spring for the royal wedding. Boy, you guys are going to be going crazy on that one, right? Well, I thought the London jokes would go better. I don't know. Maybe I'll scratch those next service. We'll see how that goes. But it's good to be here. This is my family, as you can see up on the screen. First of all, I apologize for the shirt. It was a gift. And I was heading out right afterwards to wash the car. But this is my wife, Alana, and our daughters, Holly and Kimmy. Holly is 15 and in grade 10. Kimmy is 12 and in grade 7. And because she's 12, she is still Kimmy, but could go Kimberly or Kim really at any moment. So I talked to her last night. It's still Kimmy, but we're right there. Of course, she'll always be Kimmy for me. But before I really get going here this morning, I want to share with you a few things about me, because to help you kind of understand where I'm coming from a little bit. The first thing is this. I have a mullet, and I am fully aware of that. Now, there's a number of reasons why I have a mullet. One of them is I'm from Owen Sound. And that's all. Anybody else from Owen Sound here today? Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, I go into the Magic Cuts in Owen Sound, and I say, haircut, and this is what you get. Right? This is a bit colder up there. We need to keep the back of our necks warm. In fact, you'll notice my car is the one in the parking lot with the snow on the roof. Literally, it's the only one out there with snow on the roof. The other reason why I wear the mullet is it's an 80s haircut, and I like the 80s. The 80s were a good decade for me. And so if I can keep those going as long as I can, I have no issue with that at all. In fact, I'm glad to see the loose high-top shoes coming back, because I used to wear those. And even though I used to wear the tight jeans, I just need to wear normal jeans now, and the tightness takes care of itself, so that's right. But the third reason I wear the mullet is I work in Cambodia, and in Cambodia, I am not a slave to trends, but I, in fact, set them. So there are a number of people in Cambodia also with mullets who are my students. So that helps you understand me a little bit more, and I do realize my haircut. The other thing is, I have some propaganda. I have some things at the back to take with you. We have these lovely fridge magnets. So please, a lovely picture of our family on there and address for our website. So please take one of those and put it on your fridge. And then you'll think of us when you go to the fridge. We also we're doing a fundraiser, and I'll explain a little bit about the fundraiser later on. But next Saturday, I am running in a 5-kilometer race. Now, when I walked up here this morning, I know the first thought you had was, wow, that Bill is a runner. Right? I know Pastor Mike is a runner and one of my running inspirations. But these are actually washboard abs I have here. I'm just currently doing a load of towels. So anybody can feel free to use that one if you want. But I'm running in this 5-kilometer race to raise money for our dormitory. And it's actually a race put on by the running room called the Santa Shuffle. And they do them all over Canada. And I'll be running in Newmarket. But as I said, I'll explain a little bit more about that. Or you can take one of these, and there's more information about that on our website. So I'll be running in it, and Kimmy is also running in it. We were out doing some training yesterday, and it is slowly dawning on Kimmy exactly how far 5 kilometers is. So pray for us. But as I said, it's good to be here this morning. It's good to be, it's interesting to be in Canada because people ask you, what's it like to be home? And as an international worker, and we're not really called missionaries anymore. We now are called international workers. Or if you want to be really cool, IWs. And we even have this little thing, we're IWs. So that's what we are. But when you are, it's hard to know where home is. And so when I'm in Canada, I try to enjoy as much as I can of Canada. Try to watch as many Toronto Maple Leaf games as I can, even though they all seem to end the same way. And then prepare and go back to Cambodia. But it is good to be back here and to be able to go around and share with many people what we're doing. It's interesting, as an international worker, when you go to a church, a lot of times there are expectations that you will share about the work, kind of give a report. Now, as a person who likes to preach, I don't call myself a preacher because that puts too much pressure on me. I call myself a person who likes to preach. That way, if it isn't very good, then it doesn't really matter. I wasn't a preacher. As a person who likes to preach, the opportunity to speak in English comes around only once every 5 years. And so I love to be able to come and to share the word in English, but I know that people kind of want to hear about what's going on where we're working in Cambodia. And so what I do is I try to give my best Hannah Montana impersonation and bring you the best of both worlds. Oh, come on. Now, how many of you got the Hannah Montana reference? Come on. Yeah, those of you who aren't putting your hand up are too embarrassed. Don't worry. I got some Camp Rock stuff coming up later on. Gotta love Joe Bro. But so this morning, I want to share with you through the story of Nehemiah about and Nehemiah and the rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem, share with you through that story what we're doing in Cambodia. See, Nehemiah was working, as I said, on rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, and we are working to help rebuild Cambodia and the leadership of Cambodia after the difficult time that country has gone through, helping to rebuild a generation of leadership. This morning, I said I'll explain also a little bit more about what we do, and illustrated through the message this morning. But as I begin, let me tell you about one of our students, and her name is Moni Rawat. Now, Moni Rawat is a girl who comes from rural Cambodia, comes from a very poor family, but a very smart, very academically gifted student. And so she went to high school and had good marks, and because her marks were good enough, was able to get a scholarship to go to university. Now, in Cambodia, most of the universities are located in the capital city of Phnom Penh. But the universities do not provide housing. So if someone is going to come to study, they either if they're a guy, they can live at the Buddhist temple. But I'm a firm believer in that the Buddhist temple isn't the healthiest place for a young Christian man to be. If they have relatives, they can live with their relatives, but then they end up having to do all the housework and get treated kind of like a slave. Or if they have some money, they can get together and rent a place. But basically, one of the biggest deterrents to people going on to higher education in Cambodia is a lack of places to live. And so we opened a dormitory for university students to come and to stay, Christian university students to come and stay. And so Moni Rawat was one of our first students. See, while they study to get their bachelor of whatever they're studying, while they are staying with us in our dormitory, we are also training them in leadership development and discipleship and evangelism. So in 4 years, when they graduate, they will now not only have the ability to earn a living with their degree, but now they also have all the skills and training and passion as well to go out and to either help an existing church or plant university churches in the city of Phnom Penh. Moni Rawat came, stayed in our dorm, graduated, and now has a job teaching in the public school system in Cambodia. But not only that, she's also helping out in one of our local churches with worship and with the leadership there. Well, you know what? Because of her job and her salary is no longer dependent on outside aid. She now is self-sufficient for herself and for her family as well. And so now, without that worry, without that concern about where the next meal is coming from, she can really begin to explore what it is that God has for her and God has planned for her. It's amazing to see what happens to people when they are released from that burden of worrying about where the next meal is coming from, of how they can then just really embrace what it is God has for them. Monito is one student. She's one life. But she is changing and continues to change the futures and the eternal destinies of many, many people in the country of Cambodia. So as we look this morning at the story of Nehemiah, we have learned, Nehemiah learned, I am learning, and I hope to be able to help all of us understand better this morning, that when God lays something on your hearts, there is only one choice. When God lays something on our hearts, there is only one choice, and that is to do what it is that He has laid on our hearts. So let's look at the story of Nehemiah, beginning with the burden that God laid on Nehemiah's heart. And that starts with the exile of Jerusalem. See, the Israelites had been defeated by the Persians and carried off into captivity. Jerusalem, the crown jewel of Israel, the source of great pride, the city where their temple was, where God resided, was destroyed. Completely, utterly destroyed. Many years later, people came back to Jerusalem and began to live there again, but it was still ruined. Now why? Why did this happen to Israel, God's people? Because they were not obedient. They stopped listening to and following God. This is a cycle that goes on throughout the Old Testament. If you look at the Old Testament, the people of Israel, God blesses them, they do well. They're doing well, and because they're doing well, they forget why they're doing well, and they stop listening to God, and God punishes them, and they have difficulties. And then they cry out to God, God forgive us, and help us again, and God helps them, and things go well, and then they forget, and they stop listening, and it's a cycle. And the story of Nehemiah is taking place at the down point of one of these cycles. The people returned to the city of Jerusalem, but it took the people and the city a long time to recover. Cambodia has gone through very similar history. A war that we know as the Vietnam War, which is really the Southeast Asian War, which ended in 1975, left the country in very difficult shape. In 1975, the Khmer Rouge took over Cambodia. And from 1975 to 1979, ruled that country. And during that time, an estimated 2 million people lost their lives through either overwork or starvation or execution. The city of Phnom Penh was completely emptied and completely left abandoned for 4 years. When people returned, the city was not the same. Because imagine what would happen if you left the city of London empty for 4 years. If everyone left and then 4 years came back, what would happen to the infrastructure of the city? All of these things. The city was not the same as it was when they returned. Let me read to you, as we look again at Nehemiah and Jerusalem. Let me read to you from Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 2 and 3 say, Hanani, one of my brothers, came from Judah with some other men, and I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that survived the exile, and also about Jerusalem. They said to me, those who survived the exile and are now back in the province are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates have been burned with fire. So, Nehemiah is living somewhere else, and he's living and he's working for the king. So Nehemiah is living in the palace, and he's working for the king, and he's got a good job going. And yet, Nehemiah is concerned about Jerusalem, a city he hasn't lived in for a very long time. Why does Nehemiah ask about Jerusalem? Because it's his hometown. Because it's his hometown. And we always care about our hometowns. Now, how many of you are currently not living in what you would consider your hometown? Yeah. Many of us move away from our hometowns, but our hometown holds a special place in our hearts. And we always think about our hometown, and we want to know what's going on. If our hometown newspaper has an online edition, you go on and see what's going on there. Our hometowns hold a special place in our hearts. Nehemiah's hometown was Jerusalem, and he cared about it. And he asked about it because we ask about the things that we care about. I have discovered, since being back here in Canada, that two things that we as Canadians care a great deal about are weather and the price of gas. Every conversation has those two things in it, typically. You know, sometimes instead of saying hello, I think we should just go 98 cents, 5 degrees. And we're good. We got all the information. Yes, 98 cents. I know where it's 98 cents. You got to come talk to me afterwards. Okay, it's an Owen Sound, so you might not be cost effective for you to go there. But we ask about the things that we're concerned about. Nehemiah wanted to know about Jerusalem because he cared about Jerusalem. He was sad to hear about the condition of the city of Jerusalem. And he couldn't rest. He could not rest because he knew his hometown was in trouble. As I shared with you already, my hometown is Owen Sound, but I have a new hometown. You know, you can have more than one hometown. And my new hometown is Phnom Penh. And Phnom Penh was also destroyed, as I shared with you. Destroyed and still recovering. You know, Phnom Penh used to be referred to as the Paris of Asia. Now, when they're saying that, they meant Paris, France, and not Paris, Ontario. Anybody from Paris, Ontario? Okay. All right, I won't say anything more about Paris, Ontario. I've never been, but I'm thinking they're talking about Paris, France. Never having been to Paris, France either, I hear it's very beautiful. But this is the state of modern-day Phnom Penh. Destroyed, still recovering, buildings that were once beautiful are now old and decaying, and people living in them, and nothing has really been replaced. And so the city has really never recovered from that four-year period. But the people were also damaged. Every family in the country of Cambodia lost someone. Whether it be a mother or a father or a sister or a brother or an aunt or an uncle or a grandmother or a grandfather or a cousin, every family lost someone. And so you have an entire country dealing with the effects of post-traumatic stress disorder. Imagine what that does to just the social order, the social fabric of your country. When we saw the people and we heard about the need, we knew that God was laying it on our hearts. And we knew that we had to go and to be involved. Back to the story of Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 1 verse 4 says, "When I heard these things, I sat down and wept for some days. I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven." So Nehemiah knows God is laying Jerusalem on his heart, and he knows he has to do something about it. He was called to go help the people of Jerusalem. Now, call is a word that I struggle with a little bit because I think sometimes we can misunderstand it and it can be confusing. And so I do know this, God lays things on our hearts. He lays people and or places on our hearts, and we need to act, and we need to do, and we need to act on that burden that He gives to us, because if we do not, we will be miserable. God lays different people and places on different people's hearts, but all He lays, if we are a follower of Jesus Christ, He has laid people or places on our hearts, and we need to react, and we need to act, and Nehemiah did. You know, before going to Cambodia, I had never heard really of Cambodia. And so, before going, I thought it'd be a good idea to find out a little something about the country. So my wife and I went to Blockbuster Video, and yes, it was called Blockbuster Video then, and we got a video, and we came home, and we put it in our VCR, which was about the size of that piano, right? Tracking, and yeah, all of those wonderful days. And we watched The Killing Fields. Now, The Killing Fields is not a movie I recommend as your first introduction to the country of Cambodia. But what we saw there broke our hearts, and it increased the burden that God had given to us, and we knew that we had to go, and then we knew that we had to be involved. We knew that God was leading us there. So the task that God gave to Nehemiah. Nehemiah knows that he needs to go to Jerusalem, and he needs to be involved. But he also knows that he needs support. You look at, I'm going to read that in a second. See, as I said earlier, Nehemiah works for the king. Nehemiah works in the palace. So Nehemiah's got a really good gig going, right? He works in the palace, therefore he lives in the palace. If you work and live in the palace, you got to dress well. So I'm guessing he had like a clothing allowance, probably like a Moore's gift card, and got to dress like Don Cherry. And so he's got some good clothes. He's got good food. He's not working outside. He's working inside, climate controlled and all of that. He's got a good thing going. But he shows up to work, and he's sad, and he's depressed, and he's bringing the king down. And so the king says to him essentially, what's the deal, Nehemiah? Why are you looking so sad? Nehemiah says this. Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 2 to 4. So the king asked me, why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart. I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my fathers are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? The king said to me, what is it that you want? Then I prayed to the God of heaven. So Nehemiah comes to work. He's looking kind of down. He's looking kind of depressed. The king says, what's the deal? What's with the mood? And he tells him. And what the king says next is music to international workers' ears. What is it that you want? You know, if he was Larry the Cable Guy, he'd say, what do you need to get her done? Right? But he's a king and he doesn't talk like Larry the Cable Guy. Most people don't. But he says, oh, what do you want? What's it going to take? Why does the king, though, want to help? Why would the king want to help rebuild Jerusalem? Because the king was the guy who destroyed Jerusalem. So now, why does he want to help rebuild it? Because of Nehemiah's passion. The king likes Nehemiah. This is important to Nehemiah. Therefore, it's important to the king. Passion for something attracts other people to help and to get involved. The king didn't care about Jerusalem. That was fairly obvious. The king cared about Nehemiah. Nehemiah cared about Jerusalem. So the king wanted to help. So what did Nehemiah do? First of all, he asked to be sent, you know, to get out of job without having to give his 2 weeks' notice. He also asked for financial help, which was a good move. But also he asked for influence, that the king would help him so that he can get through. You know, it's kind of like having a diplomatic passport. You can get right through the line and you don't have to worry about it. I wouldn't mind having one of those. Now, you haven't asked me yet, but I'm going to share with you anyway. about what it is that we need in order to do what it is that God has laid on our hearts. In the next 5 years, we want to see many university-aged house churches planted in the city of Phnom Penh. But in order to do that, we need to raise $20,000 a year, or $100,000 over the next 5 years. Now, those of you who have been in the CNMA for a while know a little bit about something called the Great Commission, the Global Advance Fund. And the Global Advance Fund in the past used to pay for everything that we did. But because of the economic crisis, which our government tells us is over, the board of directors in the CNMA has said that the Global Advance Fund now covers international workers' living allowances and any ministries that we do, we need to raise those funds. And so, it's been encouraging as I've traveled around to see people getting involved, and it's been encouraging, as I said, very encouraging for me to see what God is doing. But we need to raise $100,000 over the next 5 years. The other thing is that to do what we do, we need to have 500 short-termers come to Cambodia in the next 5 years, or 100 short-termers a year. And I have been in discussions with Lyle about how you guys here might be able to be involved in helping us meet that goal, and Lyle will share those with you at some other point. But that's exciting as well. Now, $120,000 a year means that we need to raise $10,000 by Christmas, and that's why I'm doing this run. So our goal is to raise that money, and so I'm going to be running next week. Problems. Nehemiah thought things were going pretty well. He got permission from the king to get out of his job. He got permission from the king to... he got financial help from the king. He got some influence from the king so that he can go and do what he felt God was calling him to do. And yet, if you look at Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 10, it says, "When Sambal the Horonite and Torbah the Amorite official heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites." So Nehemiah gets permission from the king, and he's going to go off and do this stuff, and suddenly there's these two guys giving him a hard time. Now, why are they doing that? Maybe they don't like Jews. Maybe they thought, with Nehemiah getting resources, that's less resources for their pet projects. Whatever the reason, they were giving Nehemiah problems. But that shouldn't have been surprising to Nehemiah, and it shouldn't be surprising to us when we read it, because one of the things that I have discovered is that when you do something to help people in God's name, you will have problems. Whenever you do something to help people in the name of God, you will run into problems. Why? Because Satan doesn't want us to do it. But you know what? I think God allows it to happen because God wants us to know how committed we are to doing it. If we're all gung-ho about something, and then the first moment we have problems with it, we just move on to something else, we weren't really all that committed to it in the first place. But if problems come along, we put our heads down and we keep on going, then we realize that, yes, I really am committed to this thing. So, Nehemiah had some problems, but he got through those. Then, if you look at, we move on, and Nehemiah goes to Jerusalem. Seeing is understanding. Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 11 and 12 say, "I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few men. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There were no mounts with me except the one I was riding on." So, Nehemiah, all gung-ho, all excited about Jerusalem and about working in Jerusalem and about helping the people of Jerusalem. And so now he's going to go to Jerusalem. So he gets there, he gets himself a horse, and he travels around to see the condition of the city of Jerusalem. And at that point, he's probably thinking, "I wonder if I could get my old job back." Because he gets there, and he sees the size of the task. You know, God doesn't show us the size of the task before we agree to get involved. Because if he did, we wouldn't do it. We never know the size of the task before we get involved, because if we did, we would chicken out. We wouldn't do it. When we first arrived in the country of Cambodia, I had no idea at what I would see there. I had no idea the extent of the poverty, of the social issues. But you know what? Passion covers up a whole lot of things. When we saw the students, when we saw the look in their eyes, when we saw their desire to grow and to help their country, we knew that we had to help. We knew that we had to get involved. Passion can cover over a whole lot of discomforts. So Nehemiah is in Jerusalem. He rides around. He sees the problems. He comes up with a plan. And then he has to cast the vision with the people who are there. Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace." I also told them about the gracious hand of my God upon me and what the king had said to me, and they replied, "Let us start rebuilding." So they began this good work. I love this part of the story because Nehemiah goes to Jerusalem. He rides around. He sees the size of the problem. He gathers the leaders in Jerusalem together, and he says to them, "This place is ruined. We have to start rebuilding it." And they say, "Yeah, okay." Now, these guys have been living there for a while. Why is it that they didn't start on their own? Why is it that Nehemiah had to come and say, "You know, we really should be doing this"? What, they didn't notice? Like, "Oh, look it. Oh, the wall's knocked over. Oh, and we should really fix that." Right? Now, I do that with my wife has to do that with me sometimes. "Oh, yeah, the garbage is overflowing. Yes, I should. I didn't see that. I really don't see it." But you know what? These guys had been living in poor conditions for so long, they began to think that that was normal. When we live in difficult situations, when we live in situations that are less than what God has for us, we just begin to accept that and believe that it is normal. We lose hope. These guys had lost hope. Nehemiah came and he restored hope. And that's what the gospel is all about. Restoring hope to people who have lost hope. We want to provide hope for the next generation of leaders in the city of Phnom Penh in the country of Cambodia through providing education and leadership development. I shared with you a little bit about how our dormitory works. Students come from the provinces and they live with us for 4 years, and we train them. And when they graduate, now they have the skills and the abilities and the passions to go out and to start house churches or to be able to help existing churches. We have English and computer classes so that students can not only learn these important skills, but opportunities for Christians and non-Christians to get together, and then the Christians invite the non-Christians to one of our house churches or to an existing church or to a Christian event of some kind. We have English camps happen every July and August where short-termers come from North America and teach conversational English. And if you can speak English, you can teach the conversational English that we teach. And these students get to know the students and the teachers get to know each other. The Christians from here get to know the Christians and the non-Christians in Cambodia. And more importantly, the Christians in Cambodia and the non-Christians in Cambodia get to know one another. And that relationship helps lead people into the kingdom. And once a month we have a worship time that is what's going to be, it's kind of the prototype of our first house church, and these kids get together and they worship together, and we're hoping that develops into these house churches that God has called us to plant. Back to the story of Nehemiah. Nehemiah is having more problems. If you look at Nehemiah chapter 2 verse 19, it says, "But when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Amorite official, and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked and ridiculed us. 'What is this that you are doing?' they asked. 'Are you rebelling against the king?' So now, these two guys who were giving Nehemiah problems before are back and they got a third guy. The reality is, whenever someone wants to speak negatively about someone else, you had never have problems drawing a crowd. People love to pile on. People love it. If someone's going to run somebody else down, he's going to have lots of other people who are going to come and help him do that. These guys, though, these guys remind me of, you remember the old Muppet Show? And those two old guys up in the balcony, oh, get the bear off the stage. That's what these guys are, just a couple of old blowhards. And they're just causing trouble. And I love how Nehemiah deals with it. I answered them by saying, the God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding. But as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it. It's like the story of the little red hen. Remember the story of the little red hen? Little red hen and her chicks are going to make bread, and she asks the other animals if they want to help make the bread, and nobody wants to help make the bread. But when the bread's ready to be eaten, everybody wants to help eat it. And the little red hen says, no, you didn't help make it. You're not going to help eat it. Well, Nehemiah essentially saying this, you're not helping rebuild the city. You're going to have no part of it because we're doing this. And we're doing this because God has called us to do it, and this is God's work, not ours, and so it's going to happen. I know what we're working on, what we're a part of in Cambodia is God's work, and I know that it's going to happen. Is it going to happen in the next 5 years? Is this plan that I've come up with? I don't know. But I know it's going to happen because it's God's work. Confidence in knowing that God is in charge. You know, it's really easy to say this is going to happen because it's God's thing, but it's really hard to do, and it's really hard to walk in that sometimes, isn't it? Because you know it's going to happen. You know the ending. But you don't know how you get there. And you don't know how difficult it's going to be. Today we've been looking at the story of Nehemiah. And God laid something on Nehemiah's heart. And he knew it was too big of a job to do alone. And so Nehemiah had others come and join him and be a part of that. And they came and they joined and they became a part because they saw Nehemiah's passion. And they were led by God. Today, I've been telling you a little bit about what we do. And you know, and I've given you opportunity to be able to be involved in what we do. But the reality is this. We have gone through, as I've mentioned, difficult economic times. And so I don't know if there's anyone sitting in this room who has more money now than they did 3 years ago. Probably most people have less. And yet because of all of that and how it goes. And the last 3 years for when what you do is donation-based, it's been a rough 3 years. And so because of that, now at a time where you have less money than you had before, you have more people coming around and asking to give it up and to be involved in things. And so the reality is this. We need to be like Nehemiah. And if God is laying something, if what I have said today touches a chord with you and God has laid it on your heart to be involved, I would love for you to be involved. If not, if God has laid something else, that is wonderful. And we can continue to pray for one another. Let me share with you, as I end today, the story of one more of our students. And his name is T.D. T.D. lived in our dormitory for 4 years as well. And he just recently graduated with a Bachelor of Computer Science. He now has a good job. And with that good job, is also able to provide for his family and himself. He's able to buy food, have a place to live, help out his family. He's also very involved in one of our local churches. He leads the youth group. And he is beginning and is interested in helping to plant one of these house churches that I've been sharing with you about. Before he was poor. Dependent. Now, he is financially self-sufficient. The cycle of poverty has been broken in his life, and he's able to go and do what it is that God has laid on his heart to do. He's one student. He's one life. But he has changed and will continue to change the lives, the futures, and the eternal destinies of many, many people in the country of Cambodia. I'm going to pray now. And I want to pray for you in Cambodian. Don't worry, though. I will also pray in English. I'll pray in Cambodian first, and I'll end in English so you'll know when it's done, and I don't go sit down, and you're all still standing there with your heads down. I invite you to pray with me. Let's pray.